three sections of the agenda. If we, I won't move on to the next part of the agenda just yet because I want to deal with these ones first. The minutes of the last session, the Dubai session at Rock 57, were sent out to the list, and the deadline for comment on the minutes has long passed. Also, has long passed the date when I said when I promised I would announce that the minutes were final. I didn't. So, unless somebody stands up and has a very late comment, somebody stands up. The witch is broken. Okay, somebody's pointed out that the number of the display isn't working. I didn't realize my image was quite so opaque. I don't know if I worked on that. Yeah. Hopefully we get that fixed in a moment. But nobody's standing up to say that they have any objections to the minutes, so I'm declaring them final. I'm going to assume that nobody is absolutely depending on the real-time scribing, and move on. We have one action on the item list, that was with Tim Reed to act as the editor for inputs that would come from the mailing list about the operational problems that we were perceiving, I think, about a year and a half ago. Jim tells me that he hasn't had any input, so as I think I mentioned on the mailing list already, that being the case, since nobody is interested in contributing to that document, we'll close the action item. And I won't call on Lawrence until we get the scribing thing fixed. It's done, that's great. But I just in any case scan the rest of the agenda so that you know what's coming up. Lawrence Conroy, who's been, as you know, very active in the ITF on the Enum side, is going to tell us something about implementation issues and experiences. We'll have the usual report from the RIPE NCC given by Anand with the dev. Some short news, and we didn't have a plenary presentation relevant to Enum, so we won't have item G. And we have one. We have one interaction item with other groups, and then we have time for any other business. And we close in time for lunch. So now I'll call on Lawrence to give us our, if I can just find that, it should be this window, I guess. Yeah. Ooh, there are two of those. Then we need this display. Yesterday, 2:55, or today, 10:47. Yeah, it's so I'm not going to say who did this, who did what, and how they managed to screw up, but it was fine. It started a long time ago when we realized that the specifications were written in Martian or, you know, something like that. Jim Reed and I ran the podcast, you know, it was 2005. Jim may have better memories than I have of that. And that was most of the unit, it really was, to see how people could interpret the same specifications in different ways. And I hope it helped implement this NDA. And now RFC out for this. This is really quick run through what we had in there. Okay, next. Here's a list of some of the more important documents specifying this stuff. And a list of some of the acronyms used. Obviously, there's slide decks up there, so you can look at these in detail later. I think that's all the acronyms I've used. I hope people can know about DNS. Okay, well, then let's go through what is this stuff section, which everyone always has. Okay, you know, was designed to map phone numbers to URIs via the DNS using adapters. So in RFC 2916, which was the first one, you basically had a phone number that can be translated into a domain name, and that includes the URI. The URIs are usually SIP, but sometimes you need more than a single SIP URI, and so in the later version, this was changed to phone numbers that map to GNOME services and URIs via the DNS using adapters. The real difference there was that the GNOME service was added, this identifies the kind of session or action that you get when you use this URI. From an implementer's point of view, this actually tells you the kind of program you're going to need to run for this URI, which is sometimes important. Okay. Now let's look at the NAPTA in detail. As you can see, there are six fields there. It's an application of the dynamic delegation discovery system. I always have to read that because I can never remember it. DDBS. That's specified in RFCs 3401 to 3403, give or take a half. If you notice the documents are not that easy, you could argue that part of 3404 is included, but then part of 3403 isn't included in the standard, so hey, you pay your money, you take your choice. But from now on, if you see numbers in brackets, these are the specifying RFCs. Okay, for DDBS, there are a few key things that define how the application works. The first one is what database it uses and how it stores the rules. Well, for enum, it's using DNS and it stores its rules in adapter. Its input is telephone numbers, and it's using a thing called an application unique string. That's an international phone number with everything except the number stripped out, but still with the plus at the beginning. It generates its first key into the database by these steps. Strips out more digits, reverses the character sequence, intersperses dots between each of those digits, and then appends E164.ARPA. And congratulations, that gives you a domain name. Then look up the look that up in DNS and you get the matches up. Okay, that's how simple. What could go wrong? Well, we'll skip this one, but trust me, you're going to spend time on the policies. As I said, there are six fields in an actor. The order and priority of numbers, the flag services and regular expression fields are strings, and the replacement is a domain name. Strings are UTF-8, but the flags and the services are defined as ASCII only. So you're not going to find any non-ASCII characters there. The regular expression is in two parts. It's an extended regular expression field, ERE subfield, and a replacement or REPL subfield. The ERE doesn't need non-ASCII, but it could have non-ASCII in there if the person who's doing the provisioning is a Muppet. something in blue, which is not asking. The REPL field should just be URL characters, which means again it should be ASCII. If you're going up for IRIs in the future, then you're going to need to encode them as described in the IRI document. So international domain, internationalized resource identifier, sorry. And we're looking at these fields in Japan. The sort fields, there are two of them, are the order and priority fields. These, again, people have managed to interpret these in a different way. I'll just make this one clear. The order is the major sort term, the priority is the minor sort term. Please do not get them out of the wrong way. People have done that. Also, to be clear, number one is the best. Okay, so the numbers, the lower numbers, are good. Again, people have done it the other way. The specs are confusing or, let's be honest, unrealistic in places. They say that the losing order matches are not considered, to which my answer is, well, the clients don't ever just look at the order field. If they can't support the EM service in the URI, then it's just going to be discarded anyway. So it's a bit dangerous saying that you should ignore them, because you don't really ignore anything in the end. It also says that the sort for priority is optional. Well, again, everything is optional. All clients I've seen do use this for sorting, so I think you should kind of assume that that's what's going to happen. And finally, there are some subtle bits. Is the order and priority only considered in the current RRC? It's pretty obvious that that's the case, but don't assume that it's obvious to everyone. Now we get to the kind of amusing bit. Clients, we have another. I should point out most of these things are now fixed. Okay, but these are things where we looked at different implementations and people have interpreted them in a different way. Sometimes just process the first record they see and discard the rest. I think I can say this because I can't remember that the author was mentioned. In the early asterisk implementations in the EM service, before Altmar upgraded it, they just grabbed the first NAPTA, they processed it, and that was it. If there was more than one NAPTA in the resource record set, they ignored the rest of it. They didn't bother working out the sort, they just grabbed it and did it. That's certainly the fixed. But that's actually not, for the really, really old ones, that's not uncommon. Sometimes actually just take the records in turn, don't bother sorting them, just process them one at a time. Some of them get confused when they find non-terminal matters and they just give up. Some of them discard every matter that has a lower order than the one they've seen, even if they've rejected all of the ones with the winning order, which is an interesting choice. This is particularly bad if the top one is, say, H323, and all of your clients don't handle H323. They discard that one, but they don't reconsider, they just stop. It's a great way of forcing people to go out with the PSTN. Don't do it, it's naughty. And then there's also a problem if the order in one domain is different from that in another one, you actually have a non-terminal matter. What do you do then? Do you discard everyone in the domain that you actually followed with a non-terminal matter to? Or if that one's got a better order, do you then discard everything after it? It's not that clear. Okay. Now let's look at the nice simple string field. The flags of the services field should be pretty simple. There's only one EM service, but duration is only one flag type in EM. That's you. That's defined in 3404, and it's basically, guess what, we get a URI out of the search. The syntax, which looks pretty innocent, but actually it's not that difficult. It's basically E2U
and on service itself could be broken down into separate elements using the code of the character as an internal delimiter. And some do some that. Note, this is important, there can be more than one in-app service in an app. There's only one URI, but there can be more than one in-app service. And these basically tell you the kind of actions that you can do with this URI. And also there's a because it's a DDBS application, all DDBS applications inherit the empty flag, which is a non-terminal natural or non-terminal rule. Okay? In this case, I'll come on to that one in a little while, because non-terminal natures are actually a good idea in some ways, but they're really painful in others. Okay, these are odd things that I have seen in the field. Basically, some people assume that the syntax of the services field is always that way, even if it's non-terminal. That's bad news, because that isn't the case. But then expect to find something in the services field, find it's empty and fall over. Or at least just abandon the query. Some of them misinterpret the services field as far as I can tell. What they do is they look for the ETU, then for the plus, and then assume that everything after that is a single EM service. Unsurprisingly, that fails. Also, there's the bid. This one was only a temporary problem, but it did happen, so I'll mention it. The ones that did handle more than one EM service. If they didn't like any of the enum services in there, they would just give up at that point. The real action you should get is that if you don't understand or you don't want to use one of them, go on to the next one, which might seem obvious, but apparently wasn't. And some of them decided to do this in a left-to-right order, some of them in a right-to-left order. This actually does matter. If you look at the example, there are a couple of voice plus SMS plus fax. Does this mean that the person provisioning this actually wants you to have a voice call with them? If that doesn't work, okay, go for SMS. And if that doesn't work, go for fax. Or do they really, really want to have a fax? And if that doesn't work, send them a text. And if that doesn't work, send them a voice call. So, you need to know whether to deal with these left-to-right or right-to-left order, assuming you want it deterministic. And then, finally, there were some pretty, polite words, simple clients that just ignored everything, just grabbed a URI, and, you know, that'll do. These didn't look like these things were doing the old-style 2916 processing, but they might have been. Was not obvious. Now we get south, you know, that was relatively simple. Now we get to the regular expression field. This one has lots and lots of enjoyable things for implementers. It's well defined in 34.02 and 34.03. As I said, we're generating a URI out of this one. And possibly, at least in theory, you could generate a non-terminal key, which is a fully qualified domain name in our case. The syntax is basically a delimiter. You should have three delimiters altogether, followed by an extended regular expression, then as another delimiter, and followed by the replacement field, that subfield, and then possibly followed by an I flag. I should point out the color is a bit less vivid in the version that there is online. You'll see that's a bright red one. It should really be bright red and flashing. Please do not use this. The entertainment of this field is the fact that it is almost impossible to find a delimiter which is not valid in a URL. Or is not significant in an extended regular actually means you need to put in two backslashes. A very, very common problem is actually that you look at the
quality of the Boris, I think you're mixing up problems with quality in the provisioning system with the quality in the DNS.
I don't think it's
important to keep those things separate. Systems work the same and you need the same coding, which is not true, unfortunately. So it is a royal nightmare.
That's such a poor way of putting it. I'm going to skip this one, go on to the things we have found because.
So I'll simply take this sort of talk to do some additional nitpicking here. So I have to bring this up on my new system.
Some of them assume that the URI is going to be static text, so there are no replacements with some expressions. A large number of clients, although I don't know if this is true now, but it was certainly true about 2-3 years ago, assume that the delimiter will be exclamation mark. They're hardwired to do that. Perhaps that can become a real challenge if you don't happen to use exclamation marks. So in general, because it's such a common thing, I would strongly, strongly recommend that people actually use that. just that one, I think, and if the car in your eyes fail, if it does, then you've got a problem. Speaking of problems, you'll see that at the risk of getting Patrick and Jim to stand up again, a lot of the clients don't seem to deal with black slices, or rather escaping, when these things do exist in the DRS response. I think that's the KF, and I've got to be careful here. You can occasionally see an escaping in a DRS response, however they got there. Some clients don't expect to see that character and ignore it, which then means that they just see a delimiter without noticing that this has actually been escaped using the rattle field, which then means that they don't actually work right. Yeah, that is it. And again, I did say that there can be red flashing lights. Do not use the eye flag. It is pointless. Numbers, which is what we're going to be matching against, are case insensitive. They're also asking, but they're case insensitive. So actually using the case sensitivity flag doesn't help anyone. And it does break some clients, particularly those that are just looking for static text. What they actually do is they get to the delimiter in the middle. Having got to the delimiter in the middle, they just grab everything except for the last character. You can tell this particularly for web URIs, because those are the clients that will stick an exclamation mark on the end of the web URI and then try and use it. It's a simple one, but it's quite an easy to debug. And then, of course, there are the really primitive ones that just grab everything, ignore everything in the natter and just grab the URI anyway. Patrick.
Yes, okay, and as many people in this room know, I'm one of the EU members, so this crap thing that is so ugly that Lawrence is talking about.
That's not ugly, that is written in relation.
So let me finish. This is a little bit drastic, of course, but one of the things, of course, that I've noticed and that you might have seen in some of the RCs that are written lately, I am strongly encouraging people that invent standards to not use the NAPI record. Okay. That's the first statement. The second one, is it the case that the last slide on yours is a question, should we do email version 2 without factors? Well, we don't have any real significant deployment. Is that the question you want to go down this session with? Because I think that's an interesting thing to actually spend some time and talk about.
That is indeed an interesting thing to spend some time and talk about. I would quite like it if we got an out to specs. Because I think they are flexible. But that's, I know the agenda is fairly empty at the moment, but that's a long discussion, and you know it's a long discussion. Of course we should. Of course we should, but you want to have it today. I'd quite like to eat lunch.
If we don't have it today, maybe we should wait until after the dinner and see you all in the bar.
I think our company of you and I know that it is going to take a lot longer than just a few beers to sort this one out. One of the reasons I think we don't have wide deployment is because it's taken so damn long to get the standards done. And even then, the standards are unreadable. Over a bit. Okay, and again, if that wasn't complex enough, there's the regular expression field versus the replacement field. This is in partial answer to your question about not using adapters. I think the problem is not so much adapters as DBDS is overgeneralized. It actually deals with URNs. It also deals with URLs. But the problem we've got in England is that we have domain names that are in the reverse direct character direction from the application Unix string. This means that, in principle, you should be able to use is maybe the most intangible bit, but I think this is in some ways the most difficult bit. If you haven't been in North America, you don't have a problem. Because I can generate a regular expression and I can produce a telephone number based, you know, on the domain name from that. But if you're trying to deal with Austria and Germany and Switzerland, where they have open number plans, you can't do it. Or at least it's extremely hard for you to do it. And actually, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland do exist. So, we give some guidance, and the updated versions to say, well, you use the regular expression if you've got a long-term one after you're generating a URI, and you use the replacement field, which, hey, guess what, it holds a fully qualified domain name. You use that when you've got a long-term. Yeah, I'm trying to do both. I've had engineers claiming they can do it, writing a whole bunch of hideously complex provisioning stuff to try and produce regular expressions to do that, and forgetting that Europe exists. To which the answer isn't no, that isn't good enough. So in this particular case, in the update, this looks like we're probably going to ignore this, or just say, please don't try this because it won't work. And that is my last slide. As Patrick said, NATs are very, very flexible, but they're also a challenge. So the question is, should we actually update this? Should we fix the specs, particularly 3401, 3404? Or should we? Or should we just try and throw it away and start again? I know. Question.
I'm inviting questions.
Even for me. Okay. Thank you, Peter Koch in New York. I rather wish you had Patrick here. I love reading what I said. You have been picking on Aptr for quite a while, and there are operational reasons to do that, and I'm not questioning your motives here, but one observation maybe. The reason that this whole DDS thing came into play was that someone found out that when Aptr was like, and Patrick might correct me later, the DDRFC for Aptr was reissued, it was embedded into the whole DDS schema, right? So there is no protocol correct way to just use NAPTER. You can only use it within DDDS or within these DDDS schemas like SNAPTER and UNAPTER and so on and so forth. What seems to be missing, and what then seems to make life harder for the programmers and implementers of these provisioning systems, is that there is no generic DDDS library. If that would exist, things would likely be easier because it seems people are running into these bit stuff and implementing the gory details over and over again, which is the same as if everybody would have to implement their own IP stack.
I did say that DDDS is not a general. If you wanted a general DDDS library, it would probably be larger, but would fit on a mobile phone. That probably be larger than all of the software that fits on a mobile phone. Also, there's this wonderful EU term subsidiarity. In the case of DDS, it is unclear which is the core bit and which is application specific, because understandably, DDS tries to sort of leave the specification off to the individual DDS applications. The problem is that the things like non-terminals, they're common. So that they're actually specified in 3403 and 3404 in any detail at all. she went through the item of DDBS library, you would then need to sort of have some modifications to deal with the individual applications that we're going to do, because in some ways they're rather general, and in some ways the applications almost override what's possible in DDBS. And certainly in the case I was making this slide, sorry, in this slide, for generating fully qualified domain name, you just really cannot do it realistically. Okay. And the biggest problem, I think, is going to be a provisioning system. And that's not so much just a basic library, the provisioning system is going to be a real pain in the neck, whatever you do, in my opinion.
I don't think it's possible to do a generic DDBS in a library either. I think that's a waste of time. And what could be interesting and what I have seen are some sort of application-specific things which are implemented for enum and whatever. But a more generic question regarding these various issues that you have found specifically as they are either mapped or DDBS-specific.
Mm-hmm.
Both DDBS and the console that mapper, of course, is used not only in enum but also in RFID space and ONS. Have you been in contact with the ONS people and stuff to see whether your findings are similar to theirs, whether some of your suggestions are things that help them or maybe are maybe is making life harder for them?
Yeah. The short answer is no, because I've been focused on that.
Is there anyone in the room here that work with ONS?
Which is interesting in its own right, by the way. I think it's interesting that there is nobody who's actually been working on RFIDs and things like that. We can throw them all day. You're right, I agree with you. It's in here. Well, yeah, but that's the point. If these are major users of this, I believe the email will be the major user of maps and DDBS. With the exception of the RFID thing, you kind of think that people will work together, but I haven't, because I've been focusing on the telecom aspects. But the fact that I don't think anyone has is slightly worrying.
Well, maybe all the RFID geeks are the greatest of it. Maybe all the RFID geeks are here with the right meeting up in the EIX working just now, figuring out how to get into the computer into the RFID boxes. I think the question is that there's a lot of useful information you've gathered on this from this, but I think to my mind, maybe for this book, the question maybe is what can we then use or capitalize on that? For example, maybe there could be attempts to try and produce some more test cases. Perhaps you could use a test bed. Perhaps you could look at the stuff in the back end or the provisioning side of things, but also things for clients. And just as you were talking about some of the stuff, I was thinking back to some of the tests that we did in the Etsy podcast. And we were able to sort of push the boundaries a little bit and get clients to break in various interesting and entertaining ways. And I just had this nostalgic thought, like, for example, if we used the regular expression substitution fields, we could perhaps return results from an active record processing that block the buffer sizes because you've told domain names that are more than 1053 bytes long. And that could be entertaining to try something like that. And I wonder if anybody here is interested in trying to put together some sort of test bed that could be used to try and do torture testing on clients as well as potentially torture testing on front-end provisioning systems or back-end provisioning systems.
I think it's an extremely good idea, as you know, and I know that when we did the blood test, we collected a lot of information about how clients fail. I will say no more than that about the plug test because that was all done under Chatham House Rolls. But both Jim and I at the time, and I feel even more so now, both of us think that it's a very good idea to have online torture tests and a maintained set of evil mapters to see what you can break. The buffer a little one, by the way. I wasn't going to mention here live on the microphone. That was going to be a confusing things about them. But it certainly is something that could happen. Don't always assume that these things are mistakes on the part of people. It's quite easy to misinterpret things in such a nasty way. But they actually really do break a lot of products. And if you could break a Acme packet, a board controller, just by making it go fine and look up, wouldn't that be fun? If you could take out a very significant proportion of all the next generation networks. Should we have control testing? Yes, we should. Should we have torture testing? Yes, definitely.
Services Manager at the Right NCC, and I'm here to provide an update about EM operations. For the Right NCC is the Tier 0 EM registry. We manage the E164.ARPA zone, and we've done this since 2002. Operations are quite stable. It's not a particularly busy zone. The server that we operate here in the Netherlands receives about half a query a second. 2007, this zone has also been signed. So we accept secure delegations. And what we aim to do is a review of the DNS set policies and procedures for this zone after Rite 58. Changes in delegations. There's been one new delegation since Rite 57, and that's Taiwan. This was delegated in 2008, November. So there are current total of 46 delegations. Two of these are signed and have a delegation signed records, and that's Poland and the Czech Republic. The RIPE-NCC has a project, a readiness measurement project, and we also monitor the EDOM zone in this project, and I've got some numbers here to present. We have discovered that six of the zones have at least one LIN delegation, and three have all LIN delegations. This is presented here in the pie chart. And finally, a little plug for the DNS Mon service that my colleagues in the Information Services Department run. They are now able to offer monitoring for enum zones. There is a special category for this, and it costs €500 a year. And if you have questions about this, please contact our colleagues at dnsmon-sales@rite.net. And that's about it from me. Quick update, and I'm happy to take questions.
I have one. Kasper Schiffman again, co-chair of this working group. You used to have statistics on non-delegated country codes. Is that still something you're running? Because that would sort of give us an indication of what we're actually on the ground would be for.
I remember that we presented this statistic at Rite 57, but it was more of a one-off exercise rather than a continuous monitoring. So I don't have numbers for this meeting, but if it's something that people feel we should do on a continuous basis, you know, we're happy to take that away as input and make it an action item.
So, well, I would be as possibly came across the question already. I'm interested in that, but obviously I cannot speak for other participants here, so maybe.
Perhaps I could have a show of hands if other people think this is useful and would like to see the statistic.
Before we do that, I think since the working group exists outside of the meeting of the mayors, I think the action item in the first place should be this person to try to gauge from the mayors what the interest is. And if you want to go ahead in the background preparing for an anticipated result, of course we won't forbid you.
Thanks. Any other questions? In that case, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
addressing the Department of Business. And we've given them a contract for the next 5 years to do the registry services. So since Dubai, there's been some changes. We've been keeping an eye on the new group that are looking at infrastructuring them, with a view to having them come into the UK, UK the consortium fold. We also now have an official secretariat that we appointed recently, Political Intelligence. They also look after ISPA and ISPA stuff. And another thing that we're doing before the AGM, the next AGM has to happen by the end of June, and we're looking at the Memorandum of Articles of Association, tying them down quite strongly, and that will go to a vote for the membership. And the AGM is going to be basically an open information day in the morning for the public, and during the afternoon we'll have the AGM with the voting of the new directors to be voted in. We also have, in Dubai, we didn't have any validation agents on board at the time that we're looking at becoming a validation agent of the last resort. However, luckily, by the end of the year, we had a few applications. We now have two accredited validation agents. And another two are being processed right now. Email launched for registrations on the 11th of March. And as far as I believe, there's only one registration at the moment. Any questions?
Is that your co-chairs Carsten and I have been poked by one or two private emails wondering if there's scope for talking about infrastructure in this working group, and if there's interest among the working group, we're happy to see that line of discussion develop as well. I don't ask for anybody to stand up, but anybody to stand up now, but I don't expect it, but if people want to throw some of that into the agenda for the next meeting, that would be fine. And if there's any other business, nobody's standing up, so it remains to me to thank all of you for coming, but especially Natalie and Marco, Natalie from Jabber Marco.